Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. You're almost halfway through the week. Hang in there. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Michelle Anderson from Bend, Oregon, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network. Today's June 6th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 419. This episode is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here again today. And I want to welcome my fill-in co-host for Jamie today is Michelle Anderson from thehorse.com. She usually comes on Wednesdays. I just asked her to come an hour early. Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, Glenn. Yeah, an hour early my time is way early your time. But I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm awake. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you know, it seems like every fill-in co-host I've had since Jamie's been gone has been like West Coast time. And they've all been great to get up at 5 in the morning to do this show.
Yeah, you know, at least we're horse people and we're up feeding horses, so I might as well make a phone call too.
Well, you get a little taste of what it's like to in real radio for the morning show guys who have to get up at, I think Jamie said when she was in Atlanta radio doing morning shows, she'd get up at 2:30 so she could get into the station, get her stuff done. Yeah, 2:30 in the morning.
I can't think straight. No, before 4:30, I don't think straight. I fly out a lot early, but because I work for Blood Horse, which is in Lexington, Kentucky, so I'm on the 5:45 flight through Denver every 6 weeks. So I am getting used to getting up early.
Well, you know, speaking of the Blood Horse, that's what our show's going to be about today.
Yay.
You know, when Jamie was off and we had the Belmont coming up and it's Triple Crown time and we have a potential Triple Crown winner for the first time in 800,000 years. And I thought, you know, the Blood Horse has really been the backbone of racing information for so long. And you work indirectly for the Blood Horse. And I thought, well, let's just let's do the whole show on that. And you were kind enough to get everything set up for us.
Yep, got the crew from over there. You know, I work with The Horse, which is one of the publications that Blood Horse publishes. But, you know, Blood Horse is the weekly magazine is the foundation of the company. And I don't know much about them. I sit in my office here in Bend, Oregon, and I see them walk by when we're Skyping. We do video Skype to the office. And I'm not a horse racing person, so I'm really excited to learn more about my own company and about horse racing today.
Isn't that funny?
I know.
We're here to help you learn about where you work, Michelle. That's
about my
job.
Own company.
Yeah. That's what we do here at Horses in the Morning.
Yes, thank you.
Now,
thank you for the education.
You're you know, regular listeners of the show will know your voice because they hear it every Wednesday. But now tell us, you are the digital editor of The Horse. Does that mean you're in charge of the all the content in the website? What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so we have a website. We just hit 20,000 articles on our site. We have a lot of content, a lot of horse health information, and that's what I oversee. We have a news editor who posts daily news. Every day we have fresh news. We do live events. We do Ask the Vet Lives, which our listeners or our audience can send in questions ahead of time, and then we get the best veterinary experts in to answer their questions. We do webinars, which are videos with a in real-time chat with the veterinarian. So we do all sorts of things on there. We have slideshows. So I coordinate all of that, make sure the content's good, work with our digital media team to oversee Facebook and Twitter and all that great stuff to connect with the horse world. So it's a big umbrella, lots of people working behind the scenes, and we're working on improving the website. Look, towards the end of this year, we have some really, really cool things coming up.
Terrific. You know, that's one of the things that's very, that people don't realize how difficult it is when you want to redesign a website that has that much content on it, which has tons of content.
Mm-hmm.
It is very difficult for the coders and for the web designers to transfer it all and to make it all work when you put out a new site. It is a very difficult job.
Yeah, and anytime you go out to redesign a site, you can take how much time you think it's going to take and then triple it. And that's been my experience. With that. And I have been in Horse Magazine since 1999. I got started right while I was actually still in college at Appaloosa Journal. And I was there when we did our first website for Appaloosa Journal and started from scratch. And then I've worked in corporate marketing outside of the horse world. And even that, where there's not as much content, takes forever. thank you for everyone out there patiently waiting.
You know, the other thing, though, too, Michelle, and you don't have to comment on this because I don't want you to get fired, but I can say it. I used to build websites and used to be a web designer and consultant for that. And one of the things when you're dealing with a company that has more than two people is everybody has an opinion on what should be on the website, what should be on the homepage, and nobody agrees. And
which is great. it's great. No, I mean, we have so many people on there. We have lots of people. I'm not sure if the number. I know what the number is, but it's 500,000 people looking at our site every month, and everyone has their own perspective. So by having our team, and we have a good deep team, everyone looks at it in their own way and goes, "No, this is how I would use it. No, this is what I'd be looking for. No, this is what I call that horse disease." And so by working together, we can really find ways to have our audience and the visitors to our website have a great experience and find what they need. I know because I just started with the horse in December, but when my horse had a corneal ulcer, I went to the horse.com to find the information because I knew it was good that it had been passed a board of vets who are experts in that subject. So I'm really proud to be part of the team. We have a great team of horsewomen that work on the site, as well as our behind-the-scenes people, men and women, back designing the site, coding the site, and making sure that everything works when you're on it.
Well, terrific. And, we're going to talk a lot more about the blood horse coming up and, of course, a little bit about racing today. We have the executive editor of the blood horse coming up, and also the news editor of the Blood Horse is going to do a little handicapping for us for the Belmont, and I believe they announced the final lineup today, and I think they do the post positions today, too. We'll find out from him. And then Dr. Jones is coming back for the weekly health report. We're talking about pigeon fever, and at that point, I'm out of here. I'm going to get a cup of coffee at the – ugh, that's the grossest thing.
It's nasty.
Yeah, I think anybody that doesn't want to lose their lunch today can get. We're giving you permission to only listen to part of that. We'll warn you when the gooey part's coming.
Yes, but if you want to protect your horses, listen.
I know, it's important.
So,
it's important.
Yeah.
Well, let's do our daily whinnies. Mine, I'll go first. My daily whinny goes to everybody in Sweden. We have a lot of Swedish listeners that tune in to Horses in the Morning, and it's their National Day of Sweden today. It's the national holiday observed on June the 6th every year. It has something to do with independence at some point in the past, and even Wikipedia wasn't quite sure how they all got started. So I'll let you guys figure that out, but it is the National Day in Sweden. That made me think, I don't think I had ever heard the Swedish national anthem, and it is very pretty. I want to play a little bit of it for you because it's so pretty. Here, take a listen. I don't understand a word of it, by the way.
I am a quarter Swedish, but
not getting this, though, are you?
It doesn't help. No, no.
Anyway, happy National Day to all of our listeners in Sweden. All right, it is your turn, Michelle. Here's your daily wish.
Hey, so my daily Winnie is for Dani Moritz. She is the American Horse Publication Student Award winner. She just got that award on Saturday. We had the big American Horse Publications annual conference where all of the editors and advertisers and everyone involved with horse magazines gets together and learns and celebrates and has a really good time. And we had the award that AHP gives. Chris Bruin is the executive director. Another Winnie out to her. She is awesome and has been doing this program, I think, for 20 years. And I won the award in 2000. It was amazing for me. We have two other AHP award winners on staff. Stephanie Church, our editor-in-chief, won, I think, in 98. And our news editor, Erica Larson, won it in 2008. And so it's just a really great program, and I'm really pleased to have Dani with us. Hey, Dani.
Hey, how are you?
I am good. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I just saw you in Williamsburg, Virginia. I think the last time I saw you, we were on a bus to go do some tourist stuff on Sunday before we headed out. How did you enjoy your visit with all the American Horse Publications people?
It was fantastic. It was great meeting you and Stephanie, and it was an awesome opportunity to meet all the people that I hope to work with soon. And I learned a lot about the industry and how to get into it. And it was just a really exciting and amazing experience for me. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, so can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you go to school and what your major is?
I'm a student at William Woods University in Fulton, Missouri. It's actually the first school to offer a four-year equine science program. So that's really exciting. I'm studying communications, emphasizing in journalism and PR. And then I'm also pursuing another degree in equine general studies with an emphasis in equine media. So I quite literally get to combine everything that I want to do together, which is an awesome opportunity for me. I've done a couple internships so far. I'm doing one right now with RateMyRiding.com, which is a pretty brand new website. It focuses on online coaching, connecting amateurs and people who can't really afford top-level coaching with our coaches, which is awesome, and I get to do a lot of the social media, the press releases, a little bit of the marketing, so I'm really getting my feet wet with that, and that's really exciting for me. So that's where I'm standing right now.
You're jumping right in, huh?
I'm trying to.
So Glenn, they at AHP, we always have these great themes, and this was Colonial Williamsburg, so Dani and her fellow student travel winners, there's an award given to three winners who come in, and then they interview for the final award winner for the year, and they all had to wear Colonial bonnets and get their photos taken, and I have been involved with this organization for the past 12, 13 years, and I have to tell you, that photo will never die of you in that hat, Dani.
You know, that's okay. How often do you get to go to Colonial Williamsburg? So I think a bonnet is pretty cool in that situation.
You'll see it on the big screen every year, and you will smile and remember what a great time you had and everything that this industry has to offer. So welcome into the fold.
Well,
it's really exciting. Another.
I do have a question. I have a question for Dani. Are you an English girl or Western girl? You're in Missouri. I assume you ride Western?
I'm an English girl. I'm from the Chicago area. I actually do eventing when I can afford it and when my horse is fit enough for it. I'm an English girl.
All right, just checking. I didn't know if you were a barrel racer or what you were doing.
I did a little Western school, if that counts.
Did you have to actually write something? Was there something that you wrote that led to the award?
It was actually a pretty hefty application. We submitted three clippings, a bio, our work experience, a resume, any of our achievements. So I actually had this, like, huge folder of stuff that I submitted. And then they just kind of took it from there. And then they, I guess they picked who they liked based on what we had provided then. And then they interviewed us, and we got to kind of show our professionalism, our assertiveness, and how we functioned.
From what I heard, it was a really deep group of talent. So congratulations. I saw that portfolio. It was very nice. You did a great job, Danny.
Thank you.
And Danny, I have to give you kudos too, because you're obviously a communications and public relations manager, and they're teaching you right, because you haven't said like once in this entire interview so far.
Thank you.
Have I said like yet?
Have pounded that.
Yeah, Michelle's been saying it all morning, but you're great.
I'm in like.
I try not to. I try. I don't want to get hit when I go back to school.
I was a print major. I wasn't a broadcast person. Thank you very much.
We all have the little things when you're in radio. You all have the little words that you say that drive yourself nuts, because you just can't stop saying it. All right is mine. That's my crutch word, and I cannot stop myself. I try to, and then when I listen back to the recordings, I go, damn, I said that 5 times in this show. Just, So congratulations, Danny. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and good luck with your career.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye, Danny.
Well, that's great. That's terrific. The American Horse Publications is very good at picking the winner, because look how many of them went on to great careers in equine journalism.
Yeah, I should also. I forgot to give a shout out to my girl Jennifer Dennison over at Western Horseman. She's a senior editor, and she won mid-90s, I think 94, 95, early on in this awards thing that they do. So it's really a great program. I'm glad I've been a part of it.
Well, why don't you go ahead? Evan is ready. So why don't you go ahead and introduce Evan, and we'll talk a little bit about your parent magazine.
Okay. Hey, Evan.
Hey.
Hey, this is Evan Hammonds on the line. He's executive editor of Blood Horse Magazine. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here, and I'll do my best not to say like or all right.
Or.
Thank you, Evan.
Or.
Hey, before you get started, though, Michelle, I got something to say. Evan,
yeah.
I hear a rumor that you and I are in like company, and I'll tell you why we are in like company, because I hear a rumor that you also, like myself, long before the Kentucky Derby, picked this.
I'll have another Bowie Meister photo finish! I'll have another!
Yes, I did. That is correct.
Now, I admitted in public to tens of thousands of people on this show, though, that I picked it because of the name, because I had thought it had to do with alcohol. What was your reasoning?
Well, my reasoning was it's great company, good ownership, good trainer. But the reason I picked the horse was back in February when he made his first start in the Robert Lewis Stakes, first start as a 3-year-old. He did something that other horses don't do. When I handicap races, I like to break down the fractions, break down each quarter mile. And the second and third quarter miles he ran in the Lewis were very fast, and then he still had plenty left to finish. And so from a handicapping standpoint, to me, he looked like a horse that was, again, able to do something that nobody else in the field was able to do. And luckily enough, he did it in the Derby.
So this just goes to prove something, because that sounded all intelligent and stuff, and mine sounded like I was just picking it because it sounded like I'll have another, you know, and you're sitting in a bar. And it just goes to prove, though, it doesn't matter when you're picking horse races, how you pick it, you can still end up a winner.
That's correct. It doesn't matter. All roads, hopefully all roads lead to the window to collect some money after a win.
Yeah.
So was anyone else at Blood Horse on the same page with you on I'll Have Another?
I think there were a few, but not many.
Okay. So, and you guys you're a group of smart horse racing people. So can you tell us a little bit about Blood Horse the magazine and what you guys do there?
Yeah, well, it's a weekly magazine. It's been around since 1916. It was started as a monthly news bulletin for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Horseman Association. It went weekly way back in 1929, back when there was only one Triple Crown winner. and it's thrived. Now it's, you know, it doesn't have a monster circulation like Time or Newsweek, but for people that are interested in owning and breeding thoroughbred horses, it's the magazine to read. Now, and we've also evolved into quite a large website operation. We also have other newsletters and a monthly publication called The Horse.
Mm-hmm. That's us.
Yeah.
That's me. And so Evan's one of those people that I see walking past by when I'm Skyping into the office. His office is close to Stephanie, our editor-in-chief for The Horse, so I get to see Evan quite a bit walking past.
Yeah,
and you're visiting.
Yeah, and you're always dressed up. You're always looking good. You're not in your sweatpants or anything, so.
No, but don't ask me what I'm wearing right now in my home office. No.
Okay.
That's not true.
We won't do that.
That's the advantage of radio, Evan, is we can get away with that. Evan, you know, I was over at the horse, so I want to talk a little bit about your office. You guys have one of the most unique, and I assume you're in one of the outside offices with the great big heavy doors.
Well, I have a door, yes.
No, but they're not. If I remember right, there were these great big rolling doors.
Mm-hmm. They remind me of barn doors.
Yeah, they were designed to, and lots of glass, so even if you're a manager or have one of those offices, there's that sense of community, or, you know, you're not able to hide from anybody. Yes, correct.
But they're these unique doors. They're not normal doors. They're like big barn doors. It was just so unique. I haven't seen anything like that before.
Well,
yeah, that's funny you noticed that, because that's one of the things I noticed, that they reminded me of a stable door rolling back and forth stalls, but with lots of glass and lots of light.
You know what they do? Once a day they go throw hay to Evan, and he's fine. They just shut the door, and he's good to go for the day.
Yeah, a bucket of grain, I'm good to go.
So with The Horse, we put it out every month as a print publication, and then we do daily updates on the website. But you people over in Blood Horse are, it seems like, always on a deadline. Every time I'm talking to you guys, you're on a deadline because you're a weekly magazine. So how are you guys putting together your content for the thoroughbred industry every week? How do you keep up with that?
Well, you know, now in the old days, you know, maybe a decade or so ago, a weekly magazine really wasn't that hard to put together, and now it's, again, it's you're putting together something that's a print publication, whereas you're also dealing with the web aspect of it. And a lot of websites update once a day or once every or two times a day. We update hourly. If something happens, we run with it. I was going to say we're not really 24/7, but we're kind of 18/6, so to speak. So we have people that are manning the website during the day and also at night and on weekends when most of the racing happens. So, you know, the website is very dynamic, so the deadline is every hour or when something happens.
And you guys also have a really great social media presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the videos, because I'm enjoying the videos, because I am trying to be more educated about the horse racing industry since I'm visiting Lexington so much, and it's often a topic of conversation. Like, I'll go there, I said like, when I'm there right at my hotel, which is right next to Blood Horse, sometimes I go treat myself and I'll go get a manicure. And every time I sit there and get a manicure and I'm sitting next to someone who's involved with the horse racing industry. So I have to be ready at any time. And then they ask where I work. I say Blood Horse Publications. And then I get asked questions like Glenn asks, you know, who are you picking for the Belmont? So I have to pay attention. But the videos you guys put together are really fantastic. How do you guys decide what to cover in your videos?
Yeah, and videos are kind of a new component over the last couple of years. We have a couple of quote-unquote shows that are weekly shows. We have a handicapping show called That Handicapping Show. Lenny Shulman does a show called And They're Off, which takes a little lighter note at racing. But for the Derby this year, we amped up a little bit, and through the wonderful technology of Apple and just using your iPhone, you're able to comb the backside of Churchill Downs or Pimlico for these races, talk to trainers, and instead of, you know, using your old-fashioned notebook and a pen, using your iPhone, were able to capture a few minutes of video and upload it and put it on the website. And it's really, I think it's helped a lot. It's been very popular, and I think people love it because people that are in Idaho or Florida or Maine want to know what's going on at Churchill Downs. They're able to go to bloodhorse.com and see what's going on the backside. Not necessarily in real time, but pretty close, you know, a few minutes later.
How important has the – I know when we're looking for racing news, you know, for the show, we go to the Blood Horse first. We go to your website first. How important has the Blood Horse been to the racing industry over the last, how many years did you say? It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, again, I think it is. I'm going to make a reference to Time and Newsweek, but for a long time, we were the Time or Newsweek for the thoroughbred industry, and now with the website and everything, you know, and times have changed. And just one note, our subscription base is probably about 20,000, which again you may not think is super large for a national publication, but you know those are the target audience in the industry. Now on the website, we just got some numbers not long ago for May, which is obviously our biggest month. With the Derby and whatnot, but we had close to 500,000 unique visitors in the month of May. So I think that shows you the interest and our reach.
And my understanding from circulation for your print publication, from what I've heard from our marketing team, is that your readers are completely devoted to Blood Horse, that they've been getting your publication every week for their entire life. 80 years, they get Blood Horse, maybe not that long because it hasn't been around that long, but that they keep getting it. So do you find that with your readers, that they're extremely devoted and following you guys all the time?
Oh, absolutely. We hear it all the time, or anytime you get a letter or an email, it's always, you know, I'm so-and-so. I've been reading the magazine since 1950, since 1960, since 1970. I mean, you know, people that are in the industry or interested in horse racing, this is their one big connection.
I wanted to ask you before we have to let you go, what do you think for the race? And by the way, do we know, are we finding out today who's in the final running for the Belmont? And are the post positions announced today, or is that tomorrow?
That's later today. The post position draw is at 11 o'clock today. And I think it's on HRTV and maybe on the Belmont Park or Belmont Park's website. They might be streaming it live. But I think we're looking at a 11 or 12 horse field, which is large for a horse, large for a race when you have a horse going for the Triple Crown. So that's going to be very exciting.
Sandy, are you still sticking with I'll Have Another?
Absolutely.
Good boy.
But I think he's coming up to the race about as well as we've seen a lot of other horses come up to the Triple Crown. Everything seems to be going right. There hasn't been any straws in his path in the last 3 weeks, so we're looking for him to give his best shot.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much, Evan, for being here with us. We really appreciate it. Give out the website again.
Okay. Well, the website's pretty easy. It's bloodhorse.com. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can find that at BlackCat30. And don't ask me what that means.
Okay, well, I was going to, but I won't. All right.
Hey, thanks, Black Evan. Cat 30. Thanks for joining
thanks,
us.
Thanks, Evan.
Great. Thank you all very much.
What a fun job. You get to cover racing, which is kind of, which is a fun thing. We enjoy covering racing just because it's got so much excitement, enthusiasm. It's just a cool sport to cover.
And when I am in the office, I have a little cube that I sit in and set up while I'm there. And it's a lot of fun to listen to the Blood Horse people making their phone calls, talking to the old timers in the racing industry, talking bloodlines. It's really fun.
I bet. And of course, they've been following it forever. So, you know, they know the history of all of these horses and their bloodlines. And they knew their parents and their granddaddies and grandmamas, you know, so... You know, they knew them all, which is kind of cool. Well, let's before we get to our next guest, let's take a break for Back on Track Products. They're our title sponsor for today, and I happen to know that Back on Track products are used in a lot of race barns around this country. So let's take a listen. Well, hi, Bo, and welcome back to Horses in the Morning.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Bo, I wanted to talk to you this week. You know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about using the mesh sheet and how that really covered the back and, you know, a larger portion of the horse itself. And then last week we covered the saddle pad to use when you're riding. I wanted to talk to you about the leg wraps today. When should you use the leg wraps? And you have a couple of different kinds.
Yes, all of our leg wraps work the same. It's best result is to use it overnight. If you don't have them indoors overnight, you can put them on a couple hours a day and you will see some effect, but best result you will have for overnight.
So these are not wraps that you would put you would turn them out in? It's better
no,
to,
okay. They're indoor wraps.
Okay, so all of your wraps are these particular ones are indoor. And what benefits do we see to the legs?
You're going to see that the legs tighten up because of the increase of blood circulation, and the legs are going to be tight and cool. Wind puffs disappear or get softer. Especially horses are stuck up at night, you will see a big difference with this kind of wraps on.
So it doesn't really matter what discipline we're doing. They're going to benefit almost anybody, whether English or Western or trail riders.
Oh, any horse will be helped on this. Because the horses stuck up in the legs is because of poor blood circulation, and our leg wraps to increase blood circulation 50% in second of the counts.
Did you see them being used more front legs, back legs, or all four?
Most people use all four, but the horse usually stuck up in the hind before they stuck up in front.
Okay, so if you're going to get two, they could also rotate them if they had a pair, or are there separate sizes for front and back?
It's separate sizes, come 12, 14, and 16 inch. And some people want all the four leg wraps, and you know, they help the horses, of course, if you can wrap all four legs to stay sounder.
All right, cool. And you can find out more information on the Back on Track leg wraps. You can find that at backontrackproducts.com, along with all the other products. And we've talked about the mesh sheets and the saddle pads, and we're going to continue talking about other products as we go down the road here. Well, thank you again, Bo, for continuing to be a sponsor of Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
Well, thank you again to Back on Track. It's backontrackproducts.com. Now we're continuing our conversation with the Blood Horse and talking a little bit about the Belmont and the Triple Crown this year. And, of course, we're all very excited about this week. And we have Tom Lamara on with us, who's the news editor of the Blood Horse. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Well, Tom, we wanted to get you on today to talk a little bit about handicapping. It's something that, you know, if you're just a casual race fan and, you know, you go to the track maybe once a year and you try and read that damn program, which nobody understands anything of it, we all have our ways of picking. I picked I'll Have Another 3 weeks before, you know, the Kentucky Derby just because of the name, you know, because it sounded like I was going to have another drink and that just sounded good to me. But, you know, I know there are more scientific ways to handicap races. Tell us about handicapping, and you know, does every handicapper have their own tricks and they all believe that they're right, or tell us about that.
Well, number one, you are right. The program is hard to read when you have no experience with it. And my experience was when I was a kid, not even a teenager, quite frankly, I learned how to read a racing form. And it's one of those things that that you need to put a lot of time into. And then once you learn how to read the racing form, which are the past performances, which are the previous races that each horse has run, there's a bunch of other factors. And yes, each person has their own system. Some people are speed number handicappers. Other people look at horses who are raising in class or dropping in class. Some people use everything. They throw everything into the pot, and whatever comes out is what they bet. Of course, nothing is guaranteed, as you guys know that. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people who play numbers, hit, names, you know, hunches. that's what's nice about racing is just about everything goes. There's really no restriction on how you can come up with a certain horse in a certain race.
So now, when you're looking at handicapping, let's say the Belmont this week, when you're taking a look at that race, what are you going to look at with the different horses?
Well, you know, most of these horses have run frequently this spring and last fall. So whoever's been following these horses has a pretty good idea of how they've run, where they've run, how they ran in the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. And, of course, we have a Triple Crown possibility with the winner of the Derby and the Preakness this year, which was I'll Have Another. So we've seen these horses run. You know, there's really not a whole lot more that you can do except maybe watch how the horses work out in their final workout before the race. And most of those workouts were held last weekend. The race is on Saturday, so the horses worked 6 or 7 days before the race. They do have them on the track each morning for these little easy gallops. And a lot of people, handicappers mainly, will watch that to see how the horse looks, if the horse is alert, and how the horse is training up to the race. So at this particular point, it really comes down to, from my perspective, is your gut instinct. Who do you like in the race? And then you pray for the best.
So,
because what's
so
on paper really doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah, so how much does pretty count in you picking a horse?
Me? Not at all. You know, looking good is not necessarily looking pretty. Now, that said, there's a horse in the race called Union Rags, who finished mid-pack in the Derby, a little bit better than that, actually. That horse is a gorgeous animal. And he just looks the part. He's a beautiful horse. I wouldn't say pretty, but I do think that he's a beautiful horse. So I do factor that in. I think, you know, you really need to watch the horses when they come out for the race in what they call the post parade, which is like 12 to 10 minutes prior to the race. And, yeah, you can see things there, too, for sure, like whether they're sweating. Maybe some people would say look pretty. That's not the term that I use, but there are people who do use that.
Well, so maybe I shouldn't say this on our radio broadcast, but my mom always says pick the horse that does his business in the post.
I've heard that before myself.
He can focus.
I've heard that before, and quite frankly, I've seen it work and I've seen it not work. So that's one of those old wives' tales. But quite frankly, like I said, if it's your day, your day. If you see that happen, you play the horse that wins, hey, you made money.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the level of my sophistication.
Well,
in
that's okay. That's fine,
racehorses.
Too. You know? like I said, you can pick whatever you want.
Yeah, and sometimes there's just that horse that comes out, and you can tell that he thinks a lot of himself, and he's not going to let anyone get ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes he looks a little surprised when the other horses win.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was on Blood Horse yesterday, and I was watching a video of morning gallops, and so I just wanted to point out to our listeners, if anyone wants to take a look at that, that was just fun to watch the horses, and, you know, they're feeling good, they're liking what they're doing, they're getting ready. It's just fun to see horses so happy doing their job.
Yes, the watching the horses train is really a really nice treat. Of course, there aren't a lot of people around in the morning. The horses are more relaxed. However, there are a lot of horses on the racetrack, which is why the horses in the Belmont last week received like a 15-minute window in the morning when they were the only ones on the track, mainly for safety reasons. And, of course, the afternoon of the race, if the weather is nice in New York this weekend, you know, it's quite possible that 100,000 people will show up. It's happened before. And so, you know, these horses need to adjust to having all these people in the paddock looking at them. They're on the apron. And, of course, so it's not quite the same as what happens in morning training.
Right. So. Yeah, that's for sure. So now, who is going to be the competition for I'll Have Another this week? Who's going to be the one up there running with them?
Well, the field will be drawn later this morning, and it's looking like maybe 12 or no more than 12, no less than 10. You know, the wise guys, of course, you know, are focusing in on mainly three or four horses who would appear to have the best shot to beat him. Union Rags is one of them. Nice looking horse, as I said before. Dullahan, who finished third in the Kentucky Derby, his trainer, says that the colt's been training extremely well. He figures to take some money. There's a horse expected to be entered called Street Life, who a lot of people like. I think he's only run one race, but he looks like he should handle the mile and a half. Of course, none of these horses have run a mile and a half before, and they probably never will again, so that's kind of why it's a crapshoot. But the other horses aren't getting too much talk or play, and they'll probably all be long shots with the exception of maybe the top four, maybe five. So,
mm-hmm.
Do you think any of them, there's any surprises in the field, possibly?
Having seen it happen before, I would never say that there's not a surprise. And that goes for a $5,000 claiming race up to a Breeders' Cup race or the Belmont Stakes. I think, strange things happen. And would it surprise me? No. Would I use any of those horses on my ticket? Probably not. This isn't the Kentucky Derby. This is, you know, a smaller field. These horses are more established. And really, you know, like I said, you're looking at maybe four that have really competed against each other in the Derby and the Preakness. So I would think most of the attention would come on those horses.
I think Dullahan, I'm thinking Dullahan's going to be up there. That's what I'm predicting. I kind of think I'll Have Another as one of those horses from what we've seen that needs somebody to follow and then needs somebody to beat at the end. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm thinking that Dullahan or Union Rags is going to be that horse. He needs that. It would be interesting. I don't think he's a wire-to-wire kind of horse.
I don't either. And Union Rags is kind of interesting because we have a handicapping show at bloodhorse.com, and I picked the horse to win the Kentucky Derby. Really, really liked him. Of course, he had a terrible start, probably lost all chance at the start of the race, and then he ran into some trouble heading into the far turn. Of course, it's a two-turn race, so that was heading into the second turn. And he didn't run in the Preakness. The owner and the trainer decided to back off him a little bit. He's been pointing to this race, and I told one of the guys here at the Blood Horse that he's the kind of horse that I could see really just kind of winning the race by eight lengths. Of course,
right.
That might be wishful thinking because I told myself that he would vindicate me. I don't know if it's going to happen in the Belmont Stakes. One of the other issues, too, when you have a horse trying to win all three and win the Triple Crown, you know, it's very hard not to root for the horse to do it because it hasn't been done in 34 years. You know, we may play another horse in the race to win, but, you know, I don't know of many people except those who are, you know, wagering thousands of dollars on the race against him that wouldn't want to see the horse win. So there's always that factor in the Belmont that, you know, you want to watch the race, you want to see something really great happen, but when it comes down to betting your money, it may not be on the favorite.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think that even comes into play more when it's a horse like I'll Have Another that really has come out of obscurity to do what he's done. He's got it's a Cinderella story all the way around. The jockey who really, you know, nobody had ever heard of, the trainer who, you know, who's got this history and this past that keeps coming up. I mean, the whole story is a movie in the making.
Yes, and you know. It's captivated a lot of people, although the when Smarty Jones won the first two legs of the Triple Crown in 2004, and he was a Mid-Atlantic based horse, and to me, of course, that was 8 years ago now, so I'm not remembering everything about it, but there seemed to be a lot more buzz with that horse, and I believe that was the year that they got 120,000 people in New York for the Belmont Stakes. So I'll be curious to see exactly what the crowd is this year.
So if we did have another Triple Crown winner, what do you think that would, what kind of impact would that make on the horse racing industry as far as connecting with a general audience?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, generally speaking, the 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont leading up to the race is really the opportunity to grab people's attention. Of course, we haven't seen a Triple Crown since 1978, so we haven't had that experience of having a horse win it. My guess is this. If the horse were to win, you know, with a large crowd there and millions watching on television, I think the initial bump would be good. But what would need to happen is this horse would need to continue to race. Just winning the Triple Crown, like, let's say that he were to win the Triple Crown and then retire a few weeks later.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible for racing.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that that would do anything, quite frankly. If the horse continued to race through this year, and maybe even next year, by the way, I think then you would see the kind of impact that racing is looking for. But like I said...
And the kind of impact that Zenyatta had, you know?
Right. She raced as a six-year-old and had a following. And that's really what you're looking for. I think just winning the Triple Crown with nothing else after it, I'm not so sure that that really would make that big a difference outside of an initial bump. It needs to be carried through.
Yeah, so 78, that means there's never been a Triple Crown winner during my lifetime. I've never seen one, which it would
right.
be really exciting to see one.
It's
been
close.
A long time. I'm starting
close.
To get old.
Yeah. So
a youngster.
Yeah, you are young, man. That's
oh, I don't feel that young. But yeah, no, it would be really, really fun.
Yes, it would be.
Tom, so have you made your pick?
Well, I have to because we film the handicapping show tomorrow morning. And,
okay.
Of course, I'll look at who is who is in the race. Of course, the track there is 1.5 miles around. It's wide. So, really, the post position, even in a 12-horse field, I don't think really, really matters. But I can tell you this, that the horses that I'm looking at are Street Life, because a few people have just convinced me that the horse will run well. Of course, we'll see. Union Rags. Were I to bet like an exacta, which is the first two horses, or a trifecta, which is the first three horses, or a superfecta, which is the first four horses, I would absolutely use the favorite in the race because I think that he is a legitimate horse and he does have a good chance to win the race. So really, I'm looking at maybe three or four horses.
Okay. Well, we look forward to seeing your handicapping show tomorrow and what your final decision is.
Hope it works out okay.
And good luck. Good luck with your ticket. And I look forward to watching the race. I
absolutely.
Now feel a little bit more educated, but I got a pull for that Triple Crown. Hopefully
yeah.
I'll have another crosses the wire first.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Well, that was fun. I love those guys over at the Blood Horse. They're fun, and, you know, they're not too stuffy. I love that.
They're very passionate about horse racing, for sure.
I love that. I think that's great. Well, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back, and then we're going to be talking about pigeon fever, something that you probably should stay tuned for to hear about, you know, whether, you know, another thing to make you super paranoid about your horse in the backyard. But
yep.
be back with Dr. Jones and that in just a minute. But first, we have our song, and I got to play a song that Janie would absolutely hate. Just, she would loathe this song. And I'm not too sure I like it that much either, but for all of our mini people out there, and I know there's a lot of listeners that have minis, this one's for you. It's called I Love Minis by Marianne Kennedy, and this is just for you. Well, you either liked that one or you didn't. That was I Love Minis by Marianne Kennedy. You can find it, all of her music, at MarianneKennedy.com. And, you know, I do love minis, though, I got to say. I do love minis. I think they're cute as a dickens. Well, now you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek, and I am here with Michelle Anderson of TheHorse.com, co-hosting today, filling in for Janie. You'll be back next week, hopefully, if she decides to come back from Portugal. And Coach Jen is here as well. And this show is sponsored today by Back on Track Products. You can find all of their products at backontrackproducts.com. Well, today's Horse Radio Network show highlight is the Driving Radio Show, which came out this morning, episode number 48. It was titled Horse Shopping and Driving with Disabilities. We had Kitty Cadwell on, who was a gold medalist. in Driving, who joined us about buying young horses. She helps people find horses from all over the world. And she gave us some tips on horse shopping. And she also is the coach of the U.S. Disabled Driving Team. So she talked about that and what goes into driving when you're disabled. Plus, we hear why Wendy is wearing a bathing suit to work for the next 10 days. And a little bit of the fun that she's having with dolphins and otters and all that kind of stuff. So she has more fun as a vet than anybody I've ever seen, Michelle. She just has a great time. all right. Now, Jennifer, you have to do Michelle and I a favor. Are you there, by the way?
Yes. I'm here.
Okay. So now we're gonna call this Self-Improvement Wednesday. We're gonna work on our disabilities. And Michelle's is like, and mine is all right. So anytime Michelle says like or I say all right for the rest of the show, you have to whip us.
Uh-oh.
Okay? So you get your finger on the whip button, and anytime we say that, that's the only way we're going to be aware of this, and we're going to improve. All right? See, I just did it.
And I'm not even from California.
See, I just did it, and Jennifer missed the whipping. She missed one already. You're gonna have to keep your finger.
She missed
on the
her
button.
Chance.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, yesterday on Facebook, I posted a question to everybody because we came up on yesterday's show, Michelle, and I noticed you actually answered the question. We had a lot of comments on this, and the question I posted was: we were talking today about bucket lists. If you could only do one more thing on your horsey bucket list, what would it be? And so you had one more thing that you could do in your life on your bucket list, what would it be? And we got a lot of great comments, some that I didn't expect, some that I was kind of going, what? And then others that were like, oh, that's cool. But then on your bucket list, you said own and compete an FEI dressage fjord stallion. When I'm an old lady, I will ride fjords. Why fjords? Of all the things to pick.
Because I worked as a therapeutic riding instructor for 5 years. I managed a herd at a premier accredited PATH center. And I love fjords. I had 3 different fjords in the program that I really, really enjoyed. And also because I ride this big warm blood, and at 33, my back is starting to hurt a little bit. And those fjords, some fjords are very, very rough in their trot, and some of them are like glass. And so I just have this thing where when I can't ride or decide not to ride the big moving warm bloods anymore, I'm going to get my flashy little fjord stallion, and I want a stallion because it can't be a sissy little horse. I can't go from 17 hands to 14 hands and have a sissy horse.
As if it's enough to begin with, you want a stallion.
I want a little tough guy to that added flash to make it to the FEI levels on a fjord. You know, it's a non-traditional breed, but there's a woman in the Northwest named Ann Appleby, and she's taken her fjords to Grand Prix, and it's really cool to see those non-traditional breeds kicking it in dressage, doing Piaf and Passage and Tempe changes, and that's going to be me when I'm an old lady and I can't sit a big trot anymore.
Well, of course, fjords are very popular in driving. You know, they're all over the place in driving. And when we used to belong to the Red Rose Driving Club and used to go on these long 4-hour drives with you know, 40 rigs out there and all these different kinds of horses, we used to get behind this fjord that every time that was pulling a Meadowbrook or a carriage, I can't remember which, but because that fjord was the steadiest of the horses. It wasn't, you know, stop, go. He was just steady, and he was a great horse.
And that's the way these fjords were in the therapeutic riding program that I worked for. They just are super steady, eddy kind of guys that are super smart, very athletic. The one that we had that was a driving one, he was very, very rough. He wouldn't be good for my back. But we had 2 other ones that had just great impulsion and super cute and huggable and snotty. And I really enjoyed the
Do they have the pony attitude?
Oh, you know, they have draft horse attitude, I think. You know, they're very drafty, but very cunning, very clever. Definitely the boss of everyone. Or we had one who he was lower on the totem pole, and he was so smart that he'd get himself in trouble. And then he was worried all the time. But really, really a fun horse to work with and a great partner. And so, anyway, those are my fjords. Although I saw someone posted riding cutting horses, and that's something I haven't done either. I've chased cattle a little bit, but I saw that and I went, oh man, maybe I should put that on my bucket list. But I really feel especially since I joined the staff at the horse, I've gotten a chance to knock some of those things off my horse bucket list, like going and watching Rolex. That was very cool, something that I've always wanted to do. So I got that off, and then I got to go watch racing at Keeneland. And so that's another thing knocked off my bucket list. The NFR finals, going to watch the NFR finals in Vegas, that's something I haven't done. I'd like to do that too.
Yeah, that's something I want to do too. I'm with you on that one. I want to do that one too. You want to hear a couple of the others while we're waiting for Dr. Jones here?
Sure.
Ginger, Sue said, ride through the outback, of course, of Australia. And Sue, where I'm kind of wondering, is that because you actually want to ride through the outback or you're looking to meet cowboys in the outback? I wasn't sure about that one. Ginger said, this is a different one. Ride a quadrille with my family. I'm blessed in the most of the things I've done are on my list of to-do again, and I am dealing with health issues now, and it's much harder to ride the Pacific Crest Trail for a day or gallop flat-out bareback like I used to. Well, our best to you, Ginger, and I hope one day that you can ride that trail again. Ride a zebra. Joel, well, we could probably fix you up and get that done with our friends at Zebras R Us out there in California.
Ride zebras?
She has ridden them. Wow. There are some that ride, and actually are... Our other friend down there in Texas, Sammy Joe, has jumped her zebra. So she actually has a riding jumping zebra.
Wow.
Australia seems to be a thread through here. Susan also said ride in Australia. Mike, who is of Redmond Rock, by the way, thank you for our package, Mike, said complete Tevis. So he's an endurance rider, and he wants to do Tevis, which is the
That's
tough
a good one.
Mm-hmm. Judy Howell says, ride my horse on an ocean beach. Well, that should be easy enough to accomplish. And also, drive my horse on Mackinac Island. I would also love to do that, Judy. I'm with you on there. And then we had a lot of ride in France, ride in Italy. Let me see. What was the other one? Another Australian outback seems to be popular. I think if we could put a trip together for the Australian outback, we'd have a whole gang going.
I think that sounds pretty amazing.
Oh, and then Jamie types in later in this thread and says, ride Andalusians in Spain. Oh, dot, dot, dot. Wait, dot, dot, dot. Yeah, Jamie's typing
She's
in that.
Yeah, I've been looking at her photos on Facebook. I'm jealous of that, Jamie. I'm glad to take her place today, but I'm jealous.
Yeah, she's been having a good time over there. One other one, Kelly. Francois, reining and cutting, of course, Callie Francois, is our adopted bug and is now riding up in Saratoga, learning to be a jockey. And I posted a picture of her. If everybody wants to see it, they can go to our Horses in the Morning page of her riding a horse at Saratoga. So that's Callie. She's doing very well, and we're hoping that she'll check in with us on Friday when Frankie Lovato is here. So we're hoping to hear back.
You mentioned the Pacific Crest Trail, and of course I am about 40 minutes from the Pacific Crest Trail where I'm at, and I get to ride on it quite a bit, which is really,
oh, really?
Amazing. But yeah, it's so beautiful up there in the Cascade Mountains. But I was watching our public broadcasting, Oregon Public Broadcasting. We in Oregon love our public broadcasting. And there was a show, it was called A Ride to Remember, and it's on Oregon Experience, and I think that you can find it online, but it was about this couple that in 1959 were the first people to ride the Pacific Crest Trail on horseback. And they had a little video thing, I don't know what they call them, and the little cameras in 1959 that they bought, and they taped their ride, and so they have all these great video memories of riding the trail, and trail that wasn't really meant for horses. Like, they're taking these horses over suspension bridges. It's terrifying and looks amazing. So I think that could go on. That's kind of like on my ideal bucket list. Like, that sounds like a nice idea, but I don't know that I really want to do that.
Yeah, that's one of those things that sounds great, but you're not really sure in reality it would be all that good.
Yeah, once you get there and you're about night three without a bed or a shower and So, although I do love horse camping and having my horses with me when I'm out camping. But I looked it up here. It's Don and June Mulford who decided to ride in 1959 the Pacific Crest Trail. So very cool show if anyone's out there and gets a chance to look at that online.
Now, the Pacific Crest Trail, is that the one that goes, like, from Canada all the way down to Mexico? It's the whole length of the West Coast through Oregon and Washington and California?
Yeah, and you get tons of hikers out there. And my dad came down to ride with me. He lives up on the Puget Sound, and he packs snacks. He really is into making friends with hikers on the trail to create that good relationship between people who are on foot and people who are on horseback. And so he was giving people snacks, and these people are so hungry after hiking all the way from California or Mexico. So, but it's beautiful up there. But my horse is terrified of the backpacks. My quarter horse, this isn't my warm blood would have a heart attack. He wouldn't be able to handle any of it. But my quarter horse is a pretty good guy. But the backpacks and seeing these grungy people who have been on the trail for weeks terrify him. So, but we do try to take him some power bars and some apples and feed the people. And they do come out our town. They'll hitchhike in from the trail to get a bath and maybe a bed for the night before they head back out.
Now, on that trail from up where you live, here in Florida, we have not 10 minutes from us, we have the trail that goes all the way across the state from the Gulf to the Atlantic. And they actually have separate horse trails, separate bike trails, and separate hiking trails, which is nice because you don't have that problem. But the trailheads where you go and you can get on the trail and go for a little section of it are just beautiful. Do they have trailheads there that you can go park your trailer and they have water for the horses and all that stuff?
Yes, although Dr. Jones would recommend that you don't have your horses drink out of those communal water troughs.
We don't do that, yes.
Yeah, they're there in a pinch, but she does recommend that you don't do that. But we have lots of water crossings where horses can drink. But, yeah, we have beautiful places to park. Sometimes you have to be a little tricky in your trailer driving. I'm glad that I'm pretty confident dragging my trailer around because I've had to back out of some kind of wonky spots. But yeah, they have hitching rails, places, where you can get off to the side, and you're with everyone, all the hikers. So there are kids who want to pet your horses and all that, but I think that's really fun just as a way to create that community between the horseback riders and the people who are out hiking. If I can get a little girl to beg for a pony, then I'm doing okay when I'm out there.
Terrific. Well, let's make believe you're not here and haven't been with me for an hour. And
okay.
I'll introduce the next segment. We'll start with this.
Okay, thanks.
It's time for the weekly health report from horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
I'll be back in 20 minutes.
And they just might succeed this week.
Yep.
We have the weekly health report with thehorse.com. And, of course, we have Michelle joining us. Hi, Michelle. Been a long time.
Hey. Oh, I know. It's been forever. Hi, Glenn.
And we have Dr. Jones of Florida Equine here with us. Good morning, Dr. Jones.
Good morning.
Hey, Dr. Jones.
She was a little late today. She was palpating or lavage or something. I don't know.
Lavaging something, huh?
Yeah, we got it done.
Oh, good.
Just in time.
So now you're ready to talk about pigeon fever, which is going to gross Glenn out, because I have to say, this is one of those that kind of makes me a little queasy, too, because it's kind of nasty. So can you tell us a little bit about pigeon fever and why it's a topic of conversation in your neck of the woods right now?
Yeah, we've had a couple cases here in Florida recently, and it's unusual in a very wet and humid environment to have pigeon fever. It's usually seen in dry, hot, and humid, or hot and dry environments. So for us to have one, a couple cases here, it kind of always takes us off guard. But, yes, I'm so excited about having Glenn lose his lunch this week. But it's caused by a very fancy name bacteria called Carinibacteria pseudotuberculosis. Now, granted, it is not like, because people hear tuberculosis and that's all they hear, because all the other stuff is garbage. It's not like TB in the lungs like humans, and you go and you're going to breathe in your horse's nostril and you're going to get TB. It's not that. It's a different type of bug, but yes, it has a false name to it. So It is a big pus pocket that you'll see on a horse. That's usually the clinical sign that we get presented with. And it's usually on the chest. They have a big chest, usually one size larger than the others, but they call it pigeon breast or pigeon fever because they have a huge protruding breast like a pigeon does. And you, as a veterinarian, want to lance that and release the pressure and release all the bacteria out of there so that you can clean it up and get them, you know, feeling better. They will also have a fever with this as well. Obviously, with any bacterial infection, you usually get a fever. Sometimes it just starts off local with a hot, swollen area, and then it goes systemic, and they start getting febrile themselves. But the large chest and the hot area is the number one thing you see.
So when you say drain the abscess, how much fluid are we talking about?
Buckets. It's very, very, I don't know, I call it exciting.
Why does anybody want to be on that? That's my question.
It's,
how do you do this for a living? And then you go eat lunch right after you drain buckets out of this horse. Yeah.
While we're doing it, because as it's draining, we're watching, you know, the drainage come out. And so, yeah, we have to have some time to eat lunch because it takes a while to drain it out. So, you know, we might stop and have a sandwich while we do it with a little mayonnaise on the sandwich.
Nice. So this is also called dry land distemper. That's another term for it.
Yeah.
Am I correct in that? So this is something that I had never heard of, and I've had horses since I was 3 years old until a couple years ago, and we had an outbreak in my area up in Oregon. Why is this something that we hadn't seen for a while, or is that just in my area?
Well, I mean, think about Oregon, too. I hate to say it, but you guys are humid and wet up there, too, you know, or at least wet in that area.
Okay.
You're not that dry. I mean, granted, you do have dry areas of it, but it's not like the Southwest, which is where we primarily see it, New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, Texas. Those areas you'll tend to see the pigeon breast because of the hot and dry environment. So, but you will see it in your area. We have not been able to figure out how to properly pre-diagnose for it, meaning know a horse is going to come up with it. We can diagnose from the culture of the pus that comes out, and you get the pseudotuberculosis culture, but that's usually after the effect or after the effect of it. Some horses will actually internalize the abscesses, and they'll harbor in the lymph nodes, and they'll get a swollen lymph node, and then it will go away, and swollen lymph node, and it'll go away. Those that get swollen enough that you have to lance those are painful ones as well. But those horses are harder to diagnose because it's more internal. They'll have abscesses sometimes in the liver and the lungs, they're finding. So we're not quite sure everything. We don't quite sure know everything. We, meaning the researchers at the universities, know everything about this bug, but they're getting more and more facts because they're finding it more and more commonly in horses all over the United States, not just the Southwest.
Yeah. So how is it spread from horse to horse?
Theories are flies. Be the number one thing because those are constantly landing on wounds, picking up a bug and transferring it to another horse. Very, very commonly done that way. The other possibility is this contaminant lives in the soil, and as a horse is picking up flies and picking up the dust of the soil, that soil has the bacteria on it entering through the wounds or, you know, ingested through the nasal passages or the mouth. So that would be some of the transferred ways. We don't have the whole pathway mapped out again because we have, not enough information, not enough research dollars to go after it. It doesn't cause death all the time in horses. We see it as a secondary issue when we, you know, open up the horse and look at the lung and the liver, but it is very contagious. So since it doesn't cause death, it doesn't get a high priority of research monies, I hate to say, but we have had some people doing some research on it. It's just limited because of the funds.
Yeah. So it's not likely to cause death, but it can shut your barn down if you're making your living off of horses.
Yes. So you got to think about that as a trainer or a boarding farm facility. You will have loss of income. As a rider, even amateur, who's trying to make money to pay for their horses' shows they go to, even though you do have a full-time job, your horse needs to pay for itself sometimes, those amateur riders. You will have lost work time because this takes some time to heal in. If you think about it, it's a huge abscess on the and the muscle area of the front of the chest and can go underneath the belly, and you lance that, pour the pus out, you're going to have to clean that out until it fills in. And so that's downtime of not riding. The worst case scenario is if it goes so long, it causes lymphangitis in a horse's limb or leg. Some of those horses present next year or a couple years later with lymphangitis, and we don't know why, then it goes away. Represent again with lymphangitis, goes away. That's probably, we're thinking, the carinibacterium pseudo tuberculosis in their lymph nodes reacting, but we have not been able to confirm that. The lymphangitis is going to slow you down on your training and your work schedule too.
I just made a huge mistake. I just Googled pigeon fever. Oh, don't do
that. Well, I'm sure Michelle might have a good picture to put up on Facebook for everybody to see what it looks like.
I don't know why I did it. I never do that when you're covering these gory, gross things. And I just did it, and it's like, oh, man, there's videos on vets popping them, and
Yeah.
What Tyler recommended, Glenn, as a veterinarian, and I've done it more times than not. Granted, I've only seen a few cases because, again, we're humid and we're wet and we're not the dry hot that you normally see the cases at. But I've had a couple cases here in Florida, and when I lance those abscesses, I fill buckets. I do not let it spill on the ground because it does live in the environment. We still don't know how long it lives in the environment, but it does live in the environment. So it goes into buckets, and those buckets, usually it's probably 2 5-gallon buckets I'll fill on some of these cases. And then you do lavaging out, and you collect that lavage into the bucket. So when you send the horse home, you recommend to them that they dispose of that somewhere where it cannot contaminate the rest of the farm.
So we had a pigeon fever outbreak in my area, and I live in the desert, so I'm in the drier part of the state of Oregon.
Yeah,
so when it came out, I was very concerned about it. I was working at the therapeutic riding center. I had my horses at home, and I had a friend who was boarding a horse at my place, but she also had her hunter jumper horse at another facility, and they hadn't had a couple cases of pigeon fever at her barn. So I got very paranoid, and I asked her to not wear the same boots, to not wear her same gloves, to park her car outside of my gate on my property, which she thought maybe I was going a little overboard with that. But I was concerned after talking to my own vet that a fly might catch a ride in her car and make it to my property. Are those things that you should do to protect your horses? Is there anything else that I could have done, or was I going overboard with that?
No, I mean, all those are good, reasonable factors, because all those are what we call fomites, F-O-M-I-T-E-S. Fomites that transfer diseases either on your clothing, your hands, if you're not washing your hands, your boots carrying dirt back and forth, stuff like that. That's why when you come in and out of the country, they want to know, have you been on a farm? And then they, you know, want to worry about your boots that you wore on the farm and disinfecting those coming into our country, because there's some things that other countries you carry in. Same thing from farm to farm. You want to make sure you kind of clean your boots off if you're going to go farm to farm, to not track things from one to the other. As far as the flies catching a ride, oh, yeah, that's a common thing to happen. The flies will catch a ride in the car. If she maybe drove with her windows down and blew the flies out, you know, maybe she could take care of that problem for you. But, you know, it might have been extreme on your part, but I completely respect the fact that you do not want to have that in your barn. Now, they have seen and so you don't have to worry, like, forever. They have seen barns where they have captured the flies, and they check out the flies, and the flies are carrying the bacterium in them. And then years when they don't have cases, they'll catch the flies, and the flies are negative. So it's not like the flies are the harboring of it. They found that the soil is more the harboring of it, not necessarily the flies. But the flies can carry it, but it's got to be more of a recent transmission. So a recent case would easily transmit it to another horse. But if it was a case a year ago and you're worried about those flies coming to your barn, it's probably a negative fly now.
Okay.
You also have the lifespan of the flies, too, are pretty short.
So fly control measures can also help reduce your risk of it?
Yeah, huge. Fly control measures. I mean, you also have to think about habenomyosis or summer sores with fly control measures and open wounds. So that's one thing, as well as transferring the pseudotuberculosis bug back and forth.
Okay. So if I'm a horse owner and I see some swelling on my horse's chest, what should I do?
Call your vet.
Okay.
Yeah, don't run out there with a scalpel.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Definitely not. A, the horse might kill you, and secondly, you may just contaminate your farm. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, call
well,
your
you
best.
Don't have to worry
it
about
be...
that. I'm not going to be running out there with a scalpel, matter of fact. Yeah.
It could be a kick, you know. The other diagnosis, when you look at horses with a swelling in the chest, and 9 times out of 10, it's probably a kick from another horse in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But
now,
you should rule
horse...
out.
Am I a bad horse owner if you come over to my farm and take a look at my horse and you determine that this thing has pigeon fever and you're going to have to get buckets out of it, that I say, okay, I'm out of here, you tell me when you're done? Is that a bad horse owner?
No, it's not. I have a lot of horse owners like that. I prefer that they don't pass out and hit their head on the concrete floor. So, yeah, no, you're fine.
And I have seen people start to go down after watching different vet procedures. So, it does happen. Have you ever had to take care of someone who's hit the ground while you're working on their horse?
Oh, funny you should ask. I would love it if he's listening to the show. But for many years, and up till today's date, we always give him trouble. He was a police officer. And I went out to treat his horse for colic. After hours, my husband was with me, a crowd around the stall to see what I'm going to do. So what do you treat colic? You give them some Banamine. You know, you do your vitals. You give them some Banamine, and you tube them with some mineral oil. Well, as we were tubing them, he was not the best horse to tube. He gave us a little fight. So we popped a little capillary in the nose, and it just started kind of doing a barber pole stripe down the hose, just really slow, kind of a circular motion down the tube. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this big guy go face first into the shavings in the stall, because he was the only one staying in the stall with the owner. I look over, and I am absolutely amazed that a police officer has just fainted at the sight of blood, because that's the only reason he had to go down, because it just started going down the hose as we're still passing it. And my husband looks over his shoulder, I'm looking at his shoulder, and I'm screaming at people saying, get him out of the stall, elevate his feet, and start screaming what to do with him while I'm trying to treat his horse. And thank God somebody out in the aisleway said, I'm a paramedic. I said, great, he's your problem. I'm taking care of it. The next day, he goes into, the room in the morning where they all meet to get the update before they go out in the streets, and everybody's winning in the room.
Oh,
it has already made it from the paramedic to the entire force that he passed out at the sight of blood on his own horse. So ever since then, every time I've treated this horse, which he's out of horses now, and he's moved out of state, but occasionally we talk and chat when he comes into town because his children still live here. They're grown and gone. But we'll talk about it. And, you know, anytime I was treating his horse and there was something bloody, I'm like, do you want to sit down for a minute while I take care of this? But it was a police officer that completely fainted on me.
Nice. Well, you know, and pigeon fever, it is gross. It looks nasty. Like Glenn said, the photos are gross of it. We do have some great information, as always, on thehorse.com. If you get on there and search for pigeon fever or dryland distemper or false strangles, there's an article that goes pretty in-depth, and it is article 18519. And I'll give that to everyone again. You get on and search for 18519. It's pigeon fever in horses, manifestations and complications. And it will tell you everything you need to know about this icky, nasty thing. So thank you, Dr. Jones, for talking to us about it.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And thank you, Glenn, for sticking around for it.
Yeah. I didn't want to leave Michelle totally alone here for the show. But
well, thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Jones. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're a real trooper today, Glenn.
Thank you. Yeah.
Bye.
Hey, I would not have passed out. I have seen blood in my horses before, and I would not pass out from that. But this whole lancing and buckets full of goop thing, that might get me. That's probably pretty close to taking me out of the picture. Well,
yeah,
Michelle,
but you heard...
Go ahead.
Oh, you heard how excited Dr. Jones got, and that's my own vet. He was so excited draining these horses with pigeon fever, telling me all about it. So they do like parts of their jobs. nasty.
God, that's just gross. I know. And I think subconsciously I would never date a vet because just what she said, I took my husband along. See, that's what would happen. You're getting ready to go out to a nice dinner. You're going to be away from horses for a couple of hours, and you get the call, and all of a sudden you're along, and all of a sudden we're draining pus, and then we have to go out and eat pudding for dinner.
Yep. Yeah. And it's, honey, can you hold this bucket?
Yeah.
That we train this horse.
So the moral of that story, guys, is just don't date vets. That's the moral of that story.
All
right. One quick story here before we go, and thanks to Sumiko for posting that on our Facebook page. Black Caviar is on his or her way, actually, to England to do the little race coming up on the 23rd. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is Black Caviar is wearing a compression suit. During Rolex, we had the guys who designed this compression suit came over and talked to us about it. It looks like a suit of armor. It looks like they're dressed up to be Superman or something. And apparently going to be wearing the compression suit for the 30-hour flight. They are so excited in England and in Australia about this. The article on BBC actually has Black Caviar's flight times. Going from Melbourne with a stopover at Singapore and the Times with a stopover in somewhere in the Middle East and then into London. They actually have the whole flight itinerary schedule here, and everything about this trip is being documented to the T. That's how excited they are about this whole thing.
So they can see the horse in the scuba suit?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yep. So that's what's happening with Black Caviar on the way. The race is, the Royal Ascot is the 23rd of June. They're having TV coverage on BBC. I think there's one of the American networks is also going to pick it up, and I'm sure there'll be coverage online. We'll try and get all of that for you before the 23rd. So that's June 23rd for the Royal Ascot with Black Caviar, hopefully racing. The trainer said we're going to see how it goes, and I can pull this horse to the last minute. So let's hope Black Caviar runs in England. That'd be fun.
Nice.
Well, thank you, Michelle, for being with us today. We really appreciate it. This has been fun. We've had a ton of guests
and a good
time talking about the blood horse. And hopefully you learned about something about the place where you work.
I did. I definitely did. And I'm hoping I'll have another win. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on a Triple Crown winner.
Terrific, and then we'll see you again next Wednesday, but it'll be the usual time because I don't think Jamie's given up her job.
No, but anytime you need me to step in, this has been fun.
Well, thank you, Michelle. You did a great job. You were terrific, and we didn't get whipped once.
No, once you see, I'm very easy. I'm very easy to train. I'm like my horses. Don't smack me.
Thanks, Michelle. We'll see you. Have a good one.
Bye.
We'll be back tomorrow, everybody, 9 a.m. Bay, neuter, and geld. And I'll have another.